This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 4088 for Wednesday, the 3rd of April, 2024. Today's show is entitled, Today I Learned More Bash Tips. It is part of the series Bash Scripting. It is hosted by some guy on the internet and is about 24 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, Scotty talks about supplying options to Bash scripts. You are listening to a show from the Reserve Queue. We are airing it now because we had free slots that were not filled. This is a community project that needs listeners to contribute shows in order to survive. Please consider recording a show for Hacker Public Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. I'm your host, some guy on the internet, and I gotta make this quick. I convinced my daughter that I was doing nothing special and she doesn't have to come running around here, so we're going to be talking about Today I Learned More Bash Tips. So there's a combination of the Bash Tips, I believe originally created by Dave Morris, and Today I Learned, which also created by Dave Morris. So shout out to Dave Morris. Let's get started. I got two Bash scripts that I'm including down here in the show notes. I created them relatively recently, like within the last couple of days, or they were actually modifications of a previous script. But since I had to rewrite them, technically it's, you know, creation of the a new script. So in the very first script, you'll see the name is called Showtime. In that script, it should be the top script in the list there. I should probably add Bash to the thing here. I don't know if this will work for the code blocks that I'm using here, or I don't know if those are comment blocks or code blocks, but apparently you can specify which language they're written in by including the name of the language in the top handle, whatever that's called. I'm using Pandoc Flavor Markdown to list these scripts, so hopefully they display properly with no issues. So at the top of the script, as with all my scripts, you're going to see a license. So GPL version 3, a little bit of license information, followed by the name of the script, which is Showtime. The purpose of the script, time to make a show, right? You know, you got to date other information in there. Now, right down here in variables, you'll see I made the script portable. So you'll see the first variable there, which is the bin directory. It's shorthand for bin directory. It's called binder. You can edit that to wherever your system calls its binaries from. And then the rest of the binaries called within the script should work. I'm on an Ubuntu-based distribution, so Ubuntu calls their binaries from USR bin. And I believe USR is Universal System Resources, or people refer to it as user as well. But there you go. We got the tools used in the script, cat date echo, and mk directory. A couple of other variables that I use right down in there. You're going to see those get used a little bit later on. I make my shows in the music directory, so that's what I have there. If you want to use this, if you want to repurpose this script, obviously you can just point where you want your shows to be created and use your own nomenclature. You can see how mine is set up, how I name my directories and stuff. But yeah, there you go. Now, the purpose of this show, the thing I actually learned, which I should have got out the way first, I was wondering how to do it. I knew it was possible, but I never actually learned it till very recently, which is how to give those dash options to your scripts. So for instance, if you were to call ls and you wanted to feed an option to ls, you would feed a dash l for the long option, or dash capital A for all, to include like hidden files and things like that in the output, but exclude the dot and double dot, which represents the return directories. Those are the options that I'm referring to. Again, I just never bothered to learn how to do it, because most of my scripts are very basic. And then I figured, like, look, I'm going to want to start creating scripts that did not prompt, because I have a few scripts that would prompt me with the read function to take my input and then put it in there. But I'm like, look, it'd be better if I could just feed an option to the script. That way I don't have to interact with the script directly, right? Because the purpose of the script is so you don't have to continuously keep interacting with things. You just fire the script, it does a bunch of stuff, and you're good to go. So options make that a lot better. And that's what we're doing here. I'm showing you how I've done it. There may be a better way. If so, you know, please do a show. We'd love to know. But the first thing you're going to see right after start is, you know, start just lets you know where I'm starting the business within the script here. So we got the help function. The help function is basically a here document. Shout out to Black Kernel. He taught me about here documents a while back. Another thing that I'm going to point out about Black Kernel as well, since we're on the topic, Black Kernel said in one of his shows that his father once taught him, if you have to write it twice, then it should have been a function. So with that said, it's almost like Black Kernel's father taught both of us that. So clearly with that logic, me and Black Kernel are now brothers. If you ask him about that, he may try to deny it. So don't listen to Black Kernel. So now got a little distracted there. Yeah, you got the usage inside a here document. So the usage is very simple. It just tells you what you're going to be typing in order to get the feedback that you want. And that's just a reminder from me because I got a ton of scripts and it's good to just be able to call a dash H to know that, hey, look, you know, this is how you use this crazy thing you wrote. All right. So now that we're past that function, the help, which will be called later on in the script, we now have a quick little comment here to let you know that we're using GitOps, which is like the key ingredient here, or one of the key ingredients. So my guess is GitOps stands for Git Options. We're going to run a while loop here against GitOps, and we're feeding into GitOps. We got a set of double quotes here, and within those double quotes are the options that we're feeding in. So we're running, as you can see here, we got the colon S, colon R, colon Q, and colon H. Those are the options that I want to feed in. Now, what they mean is S is for show, R is for reserve show, or reserve Q rather, because it's actually Q, but because I actually use Q for quit, which I think I need to take that out of there, because now that it no longer needs a quit, because we're just feeding in options, so we no longer need a quit. But I typically use Q for quit as an option. So that's why I could not use Q for Q, you know, the letter Q for the word Q. So I use S for show, R for reserve Q, Q for quit, H for help. Those are the options that get fed into Git options. Now it's looking for those options within the variable option that is right after it. You know what I mean? So, we run a case statement on options, the variable option. And now you can see down there in the very first option, which is S for show, I got a variable called show, which takes the next bit of secret sauce, which is the variable opt arg, which I think is optional argument. So this is the thing that you put afterward. So if I call the script, I would do script name space dash S for show. So we're doing a regular show. And then I would do space, the name of the show. Now the name of the show is going to be collected by optional argument. All right. So the option gets called by gets captured by GitOps, and the name of the show is going to get captured by optional argument. Both of those get fed into this case statement, and it matches up whatever option you selected in the case statement. So the case will, you know, define what happens afterward. You'll see for show, we just make a couple directories, but I think we also, if I'm not mistaken, let me go ahead and scroll a little bit further down here. I thought I had an F statement in here somewhere. I'm reading through the markdown file right now, so I don't have any sort of highlighting, you know, my syntax highlighting. So I'm getting lost in here. I'm sure I had an F statement in here. Oh, you know what? This is the first function. Okay. So we have the MKQ function for make Q. Right. So this is a show for the standard queue. So that's what MKQ stands for. And I got a bunch of stuff that I'm going to reuse later on in there for, you know, making the actual directory, making the subdirectory within the parent directory. So that show that I want, it'll be created within the music directory. And then I like to have a edit subdirectory and a prod subdirectory within the show name directory, as well as show notes also gets created in there. Like the script handles all of it, gives me my full directory structure as well as show notes. And then the show notes, it just puts some simple stuff in there just so you have a basic structure along with the license agreement at the bottom of the, the CCBYSA at the bottom of the document. And now here goes that F statement that I was looking for earlier. So what the F statement does is it just checks to see, is that a real directory? Like, are you actually, and it's checking for a specific thing though. See, I have, say, in the music directory, I have a subdirectory called Shoals. No, well, it's HPR Shoals. Now, inside of Shoals, I think it's like the year. So it's 2023. And what happens is when 2024 rolls around, which is tomorrow, this F statement will check to see if the year that we're entering the new show that is to be created, if it matches up with whatever year it is currently. So since there's only a 2023 in there right now, when 2024 rolls around, it's going to realize, oh, there is no 2024 directory. Let's create the 2024 directory and then put the show in the 2024 directory. Or at least that's what I hope will happen. We'll find out when 2024 gets here, right? If it doesn't work, there'll be an update show. And I'll thank those of you who are going to slam me in the comments with, hey, your script's broken. Yeah, you know, kindly do a show. Anywho, that's what's happening there with that F statement. It's going to give me the new year and then put the directory structure that I enjoy for my show, you know, the name of the show plus the subdirectory edit prod down in there with my show notes by calling that same function again, MKQ. And I have the exact same thing set up for the reserve queue. You know, I have a function MKR for make reserve show, and it does the exact same thing as MKQ and, you know, yada, yada. Again, I have to delete quit out of there. I'm going to leave it in there for now, because if I try to take it out in a hurry, I'll probably break the script and that'll cause a problem. So I'm just going to leave it in there for now. Leave it in there for now. And it's benign. You can strip it out if you like. And there's, you know, you'll see the help portion down there at the bottom where it calls the help function that we created earlier that has that here document in it. So if you don't do a lot of bash scripting and you wanted to know how to use here documents, this is some of the ways you could see how they're used. You know, they're very simple, but if you've never done it before, it just sounds like a crazy term, a here document. It sounds like a physical document that you're somehow attaching to the script, when in reality, it's just how you redirect, I guess, input. This will be output, whatever. You'll be able to see it in there. So that's the first script. The second one, again, is just more of creating a script. I guess it's just another example you could use for creating a script and feeding options to it with, you know, little dash, whatever option you want. And this one, actually, what is this script? Oh, yeah, this is the one with screen. I've been using screen a lot more, and there's a couple of sockets that I always create, which is app and jobby. And I do a lot of the work inside of these sockets now. So that way my main terminal, if I have to do anything with my system, I typically use that on the main terminal, or unless it's an update, something that's going to drag out for a long time, then I just hop in jobby and do that. But you know what I mean? If I'm going to be looking at logs or anything like that, I'll do that in the main terminal, but all of the other crap that I want to run in the background, I'll hop in a socket and do it. And all this script does is allow me to quickly get my sockets that I typically like to use, which are apt and jobby, quickly created. And then, you know, I'm off doing my thing. As well as, I don't always like to hop into a socket just to kill the socket, right? Sometimes I just want to kill the socket from the primary session, or from outside of the socket, I should say. And this script just makes it a lot easier, so I don't have to go through the long-winded command. I could just run the script name plus the option that I want and kill the socket. All right, so I'll just quickly run us through it, because again, the main thing here is the TIL, adding options to a script. You guys already know about the help function at the top up there. I got the help function, which describes how the script works. And actually, while we're up here at the help section, I'll just go ahead and talk to you a little bit about that. So basically, you call the script name, you feed it an option. So the first, I'll talk to you about the B option, because that was the unique one. I had to do a little funny business to get that to work. I wanted the B option to be just call B and it would do something, but it I don't exactly have the skill to make that work, or maybe it just was not designed to work that way, where it'd be script name, space, hyphen, B, carriage return, and then your script would begin doing whatever it is you instructed it to do. Instead, I had to supply something else after the option. So what I've chosen to do is supply yes or no to the option B. And what that'll do is it will either create my commonly used sockets, which are apps and Jobby, or if I hit no, you know, if I supply N to it instead of Y, it would, it would delete those sockets. So once I'm done working for the day and I'm about to shut down, rather than killing each socket individually, because typically those are the only two that I need, I can just, you know, run option B a second time when I call the script. But instead of saying yes, say no, and it will kill those two sockets for me. So now let's just scroll down and get down here to the bottom. All right, so you guys know about the while loop. We're down here at the while loop within the script, and I left all my little debug echoes that are in there. I could have cleaned those out, but I mean, why not just leave them in there? Maybe you guys could learn something from that as well. Who knows? But typically, when something goes wrong in the script and you want to know exactly where it goes wrong, I use those little echo statements to kind of just let me know where the script is when it's running. And hopefully we make it all the way through. But if we don't, I'll know exactly where it broke at by, you know, which echo statement did not, or where it stopped at with the echo statements. Okay, what's going on? My daughter's already causing trouble. Let me stop for a second and go take care of that. Okay, I've returned. I don't quite remember where I left off at. Let's look at the show notes here, and I'll just pick up from whatever line I'm left on. Whew, kids. Gotta love them, huh? Okay, so down here we'll see an if statement where I'm... What am I doing here? Oh, yeah, there we are. So what I'm doing is I'm searching the argument that's being supplied and seeing if rather or not the user typed yes or no, or not yes or no, but Y or N. So if the user typed Y, which stands for yes, then it would, you see the options being right down below it, which is calling screen, and the options that screen has available to it, which I'm using the hyphen lowercase d m capital s. Those are the three options that I'm calling into screen in order to create a socket without being switched into the socket. You use the DM S capital S with screen will allow you to create a socket, but it will move you into that socket when you create it. Obviously, I don't want to do that because I'm creating multiple sockets. So I don't want to be swapped into a socket, then have to leave the socket to then create another socket, or end up in a problematic situation where I'm inside of a socket trying to create another socket. So you just create all of the sockets that you need and then transfer into them when you need to. Now, after creating the sockets, we run an ls through screen, which allows screen to display the available sockets. So ls is just list socket. In bash as well, you can see the lf, so the additional thing to check for. And what we're doing is checking if the user supplied N, which is no, then kill those sockets. And with screen, the way you kill a socket from outside of the socket, you would call the X for execute. Then you would specify the socket with, you know, the capital S. So it's a capital X for execute, capital S for specifying a socket, the name of the socket. And here's what one of the things about when you're targeting a socket in screen, you don't have to use the full name. So you can see with my socket names, I have it as apps, four letters, APPS. But when I want to kill it, I could just do AP. I don't have to do the full APPS. Same thing with Jobby. It's J-O-B-B-Y. Same thing. I just do J-O-B and then you could just kill it. You could also kill it by the PID, because that's going to require a lot more writing to, target the PID. You can forget about that. We're not doing that. I used PID when I want to kill with a PID. I do that a little more manually, right? You know, certainly not going to be doing all of that bash just to kill with a PID. It's not necessary. And we got our obligatory good heavens right down there just in case somebody types something other than Y or N. So if you try to put a Z in there, you're going to get good heavens. And then the help menu will pop up, hopefully explaining that you not do that the next time. And we got the S option down there in the case statement as well, where what does that do anyways? Okay. So that's just creating additional sockets that are, you know, if for whatever reason I needed another socket, I could just run the S option, then the name of the socket would be the argument. So I'd be able to create more sockets if needed. K is for killing sockets. So the K in that which is being managed through case, I've already talked about screens, capital X, capital S options for screen. And I know I'm saying option for both the script that I'm talking about as well as for the screen program. So, you know, hopefully it makes sense. If you're new, just give the show another listen. And, you know, if you check the show notes, it'll be a little bit more clear. But there it is. And again, those echo statements are just sort of debug statements to let me know where it failed during the time that I was writing it up. Another thing that I want to pop out here, because we're down here at the bottom of the show now. I'm all the way at the bottom. There's no need to explain anything else except for, I guess I could put a little bit more emphasis on the good heavens invalid input. Obviously, if you put in anything that isn't listed within the case statement, you're going to get an error and you need a way to manage the error. And the best way to manage it is by, you know, splash screen good heavens, you know. I wish there was a way to add a sound effect to where it makes it sound like something thumping on your monitor, on the glass of your monitor, letting you know, like, hey, you did something wrong. Okay, enough about that. And no, that you really don't need anything like that. I was just being silly. But I just want to quickly talk about indenting when you're writing in kind of script or coding or whatever. I still don't have a clue how to indent. Right. Like everything you see here is just what works for me. My guess is there's no real, well, maybe there is, because depending on where you're working, what project you're working on, they may have sort of rules about indenting. I've tried to watch some videos on it, but, typically what happens is they use languages I don't understand during the explanation. So I just get lost trying to figure out what the language is, what the code is that they're using, what it's doing. And really don't take away anything about the actual indenting. So my understanding of it is that it's supposed to make the code a little bit more readable, but even so, right, the actual practice is like the best practice of how far to indent before you start getting into the good heavens range. Yeah, that is still not exactly a thing that I understand. And maybe it'll be more understandable, with an understanding of more languages. So as you learn more languages and the practices from those languages, you have a better understanding of how indenting is done. Maybe it's just done differently in each language. So, who knows, right? Or at least I don't know. If you know, there's a show. All right. Maybe you just have a technique you like to use and it may not be like an industry standard, but you use it and it works out just fine. There you go. So if you've ever wanted to write a script and be able to do the little dash options to supply to your script, now you have two good examples on how you could accomplish that. And you're welcome. Go ahead and leave a comment down below or do a show as a comment. And I'll catch you guys on the next episode of Hacker Public Radio. Thank you. I'm some guy on the internet signing off.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HBR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.